President Bush also visited Gothenburg, Sweden last week to meet leaders at a summit of the European Union. His plans for a missile defense system and his opposition to the Kyoto Protocol to combat global warming topped the agenda at those talks. The EU leaders continued their meetings into this weekend as demonstrators protested economic globalization and capital punishment in the United States. But in a major breakthrough at the summit, the participants agreed to a timetable for admission of new countries as members by 2004. Former communist states of Central Europe are expected to be the first. In this report from Gothenburg, NPR's Julie McCarthy summarizes the EU summit.
The European Union unites 377 million people who export more goods than any other trading bloc in the world. The fall of the Berlin Wall created a rush among former Eastern Bloc countries to join. How to bring them in and unite the continent has been a principal preoccupation in Europe. Yesterday, the EU said it would complete its negotiations with the first wave of candidates by the end of next year. And by 2004, countries such as Hungary and the Czech Republic are expected to become members. The outcome delighted EU applicants and European Commission President Romano Prodi.
The Europe is going on to fulfill its age-old dream of peaceful democratic unity. We agreed here to maintain and strengthen our commitments on enlargement. The enlargement process is irreversible, and there is no going back now. There is no going back.
Ireland could confound things, however. Earlier this month, the Irish people voted down a referendum on an EU treaty that lays the foundation for enlargement. The no vote was a product not of disdain for new members, but rather fears that the Irish Republic would become dominated by larger countries in the EU. The outcome jolted the EU and demonstrated the disconnect between it and the people it represents. Irish Foreign Secretary Brian Cohen says all 15 EU countries face a challenge in bridging what has become known in Europe as the democracy deficit.
It's a question of really the European Union making sense to people in a way that is relevant to their everyday lives and where they're working, how they're working, under what conditions they're working, rather than saying, why don't people see that? The fact is they don't. And that is what the nature of the democratic deficit is. We've got to use language and use a political currency that it makes sense to people, rather than going to their libraries and trying to find it in a book somewhere.
The civil unrest that overtook the EU summit this past week had Swedes in disbelief. The riots follow a pattern of violent disturbances at gatherings of international institutions. Demonstrators marched against globalization, racism, and the death penalty, a slap at the Americans more than the EU. Saturday's protest chanted down the police but passed peacefully. A day earlier, youths in black masks overtook the city center, setting fires, smashing windows, and attacking ill-equipped police. More than 500 people have been arrested. When three were shot, the country's police chief found himself having to explain why police were armed with pistols rather than tear gas and water cannon. Through an interpreter, a shaken Prime Minister Göran Persson closed the summit, praising the police.
Who've been working very hard in order to hold back those who quite deliberately are seeking to destroy not just material goods, but democracy, criminal groups traveling from country to country specifically aimed at destroying democracy.
Turmoil on the policy front reared its head over the issue of global warming when President Bush came to Sweden for a get-acquainted session in a run-up to the EU summit. The Europeans agreed to disagree with the Americans over the Kyoto Climate Change Accord that the Bush team rejects. The president's personality was as much on display as his policies. He reportedly greeted Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair with a towel-snapping, "Hey, landslide," a reference to his election victory last week. Saturday, Blair refused to confirm the remark.
Did I forget to answer that question?
The British press sniffed at the president's verbal stumbles and the Germans assailed his plain speaking style. But the Swedes seemed drawn to the straight-talking Texan. Annette Kuhlenberg is a columnist with Sweden's largest daily newspaper.
he can reach out to people, even here in Sweden, where he has never been before. And I admire him for this talent he has to speak to ordinary people. He's an ordinary American, and he has a sense of humor. You can see that in his eyes. He doesn't take everything so seriously as we, dull, gray, square Swedes do.
Tony Blair says the president also got high marks for his candor on issues such as missile defense.
And I thought what was interesting and refreshing about the way that President Bush approached it is that he obviously has the confidence in what he believes in order to have that debate. And I think that's the right way of approaching. Now, where we get to in the end, well, that's a matter we can discuss over the coming months. But people do not want grandstanding on either side. It's very easy to do that. What people wanted was dialogue and a sense of partnership. And I'm sure that that's what will happen.
The EU's pledge to enlarge coincides with President Bush urging the eastward expansion of the EU and NATO to erase Europe's Cold War division. The US and EU are intent on emphasizing what unites, not divides them. Yet some in the EU believe the president's speech risked unnecessarily alienating Russia. Even where it finds common ground, the transatlantic partnership looks set for a period of two steps forward, one step back. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Gothenburg, Sweden.